Hey, we got a fun pod planned for you today. Today's episode of the Ryan Russillo Podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by, you guessed it, State Farm. Getting great car and home insurance from State Farm at a surprisingly great rate. That's like drafting a player that becomes an all-pro, the real deal. State Farm agents provide personalized service so you can customize your insurance to fit your needs, like a GM putting together their very own roster. You need a team that supports you, and State Farm's got a great one. In addition to agents, the award-winning mobile app helps manage coverage, pay bills, file claims, and more. With a great price and even greater service, State Farm goes from strength to strength. Choose insurance that always brings its A-game. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. It's the Ryan Russillo Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. So I was wondering what made Bai so great. And it's actually pretty simple. Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. And the flavors are delicious. For me, it has to be Bai Zambia Bing Cherry. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic bold flavors at drinkbai.com. So the plan for today is I want to do a little NBA with a couple news items, and then we're going to react to the college football playoff rankings that everybody is upset about again, which is understandable. I get why people are upset. I'm not going to say, hey, don't be upset, but I'm going to go over a couple things. And I'm not even going to sit here and say like, hey, the committee's right again, because I know I've done some of that stuff in the past, but I do want to talk about that. We'll do life advice. But the most important thing we have with this one, I'm really excited to talk with comedian Nate Bargatze, who is awesome. I ran across videos because I was actually watching, I saw Dan Soder do stand-up in New York, I think the last time I was in New York City, and I was like, this guy's great. And then I saw, it was like, hey, did you like Soder? Well, you're going to love Nate Bargatze. So I don't even know what that meant. Does that mean the algorithm likes Nate more than Dan? That seems weird and unfair. And I don't want to play favorites here, but I watched Nate's special. It was hysterical, and he's going to come on. And I think we know a couple of the same people on the Vandy deal, or just Nashville in general. Are you a big Nashville guy, Kyle?
Not a big traveling guy, but Nashville's on the list for sure.
Yeah, you would like Nashville.
I'm sure
you would do well. You know what I always thought was a great line in Ocean's 11 was when, is it Chris Kahn? It's James Kahn's son who plays. He's the guy with Casey Affleck, the two guys that are up in Utah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You with me here?
Yeah.
And they go to the first meet, the money guy, Ruben's place, and they're all mingling. And it's Reiner, who's old, and he's the old con artist, and you know, he's very seasoned. And the con character is like, have you been to Provo? I think you could do well there. I always thought that was really, really funny. I always thought that was such a great line, because it's like a classic younger guy trying to break the ice with an older guy that wants nothing to do with them, even though they're going to be in a crew together. And just that line, is a great line in a movie. He's like, I think you could do well in Provo. I think you'd do well there. And he's like, oh yeah, cool. So yeah, but I actually do believe that you would do well in Nashville.
Lots of people moved to Nashville, like from like some elite cities. They're like, yeah, Nashville's for me. So I think a lot of folks from LA go to Nashville too.
Yeah. Nashville is kind of that cool. I think, you know, what it comes down to is, there are a lot of people that kind of want to be cowboys sometimes. And it's also a party city, so that's part of it. And it's, you know, it's got a major university that's
any
great.
Lakes?
I'm sure there's some lakes there. A lot of history, a lot of Civil War history through the state of Tennessee. A lot of battles. A couple forts that the North had to take out when it didn't look like it was going to happen. But Grant's army was able to take those out. Let's not get bogged down in specifics. I'm just remembering some things, because I remember I wanted to go check out a couple of those forts when I was there, and Sarah Walsh and Matt Bushman were like, that's pretty far away, dude. It's like, that's like rent a car, you're gonna be gone for the day. I was like, oh, all right. Well, maybe we'll just go to Vandy. So I want to talk about some of the NBA stuff. The first thing with Giannis' extension, 5 years, $228 million. There's a player opt-out at the end of that. And that is great news for Milwaukee. Great news. Actually, it's great news for Giannis because he's got the money. It's good news for Milwaukee because post-Kawhi, I will never, ever be surprised by any personality whatsoever, meaning NBA star personality, that decides, you know what, I think I'm out of here. And I'm not doing that to bum Milwaukee Bucks fans out. But I'm now to the point where, okay, that's what the contract is. That's great. You signed him. But what if it doesn't really work out in like a couple years? You know, and I think that's a completely reasonable way to look at any of these contracts. But as of right now, because when that Jrue Holiday trade happened, we've talked about this on the podcast before, it was expected NBA circles were saying, yep, the Giannis extension, that'll be done Friday. And then it wasn't done Friday. And then like a month went by. And the fact that that's done is great. And it's great for Milwaukee, but I've heard a lot of people say this is great for small market teams. No, this is great for Milwaukee. It's great for Giannis. Why is it great for another small market team? Think about that statement. Think about what that statement means. Do you think if Zion, and look, Zion's a year in, but he'll do the rookie extension because that's the way it works. Let's say Zion's 7 years in and he's really productive and he's one of the league's best players, which I think he has a chance to, but he's going to have to work a little harder. What if he's up and the money's good and there's all sorts of interest, it's bigger market, he hasn't been able to win? And I'm like, don't take this personally, New Orleans. I'm just using this as an example. What if in that pitch, David Griffin goes, well, Zion, you know, Giannis a bunch of years ago stayed in Milwaukee, so that was good for small market. And you know, we're a smaller market, so has nothing to do with any other small market. It just doesn't. It doesn't. And here's what's going to happen. Milwaukee's going to win a ton of games. Maybe they're the one seed. When I was trying to figure out the East in general, I could look at some of these teams and say, I could see like a two seed or I could see a four seed. I could see Brooklyn being a two. I could see them being a four. I could see Milwaukee being the one seed and no one caring because of the playoff failures, even with a different roster. I could see Boston being a top three. I could see them outside of the top three, depending on Kemba. I could see Philly. They have to be better, right? They have to just be better with Doc and Daryl. But if the Embiid-Simmons thing never truly unlocks, there's a cap on that. Toronto's always going to probably be a little bit better than you'd expect because they're just good at, you know, winning games. They just are. And that leaves out Indy, Brooklyn. Like, I'm all over the place, and I haven't even mentioned Miami yet because Miami representing the East, they could come out of the East again here too. So that 1-6 is kind of hard to figure out, but I'm pretty sure Milwaukee's going to at least be a 1 or a 2 seed, and no one's going to care. But I think this news is good for two people, Giannis and the GM, John Horst. And look, we can talk ownership and all the different stuff. Now, as I mentioned, Brooklyn, I have to get to Kanye Irving here and his IG video that came out with he and Kevin Durant. I'm going to play that for you now.
So what about 7 post-ups instead of 8?
I mean, we negotiated. I thought we was going to do 2.5 post-ups a game. The half one is like, I throw you the ball in the post and you just throw it right back out to me.
No, but I'm also saying I feel like every play down I have a mismatch, no matter who's in front of me. So I think that mentality mixed with having that post guard is a great balance, you know, for our squad, for our offense.
Yeah, we're going to see, though.
Okay, the amount of times over the last week that I have laughed hearing Kevin Durant after Kyrie's talking about 7 to 8 post touches a game where Durant goes, yeah, we're going to see, though. I cannot express to you how damn funny that is to me. Yeah, we're gonna see, though. That is him being like, no, we're not running you in the post. Just for reference again, the leading post up players in the league, I think it's Embiid, because I remember I looked at this, like Al Jefferson 10 years ago led the league in 20 post ups a game. Embiid's at like 10 leads, and Kyrie's saying, I have length, I have, you know, all these things that he says in the clip, and, you know, 7 or 8, maybe a half. And when he starts telling Durant, I'm who you were, like, none of this makes any sense. And it's a continuation of the Kanye Irving chapters here that get more and more absurd. The pawn thing, which, again, I don't really care about. I would say that there's never been a time that the media has been more disliked than right now. And it's not specific to just news media. It's nastier towards news media, but sports media as well. We've been over this. What I do is not that impressive to you. There are many people that think whether it's me or other people that talk for a living about sports, and they look at the what happens and turning it into this kind of career, and you're like, I could have done that. I'm like, yeah, all right. Maybe you could have. All right. So I think that there's more support for somebody like Kyrie calling everybody in the media pawns, which again, I don't really care. I'm just telling Brooklyn fans, you're the only ones defending this, really. I mean, you're the only ones defending this. Or if you're just a huge NBA fan and you love Kyrie and you're just going to defend Kyrie. And it's getting so crazy with Kyrie that I'm not even mad about it. Like, I don't care that he's not my boss. And we've been over all of these different things. And maybe they do win games. Maybe it does work out. But I think there has to be a sliver of you that goes, oh, wait, maybe this is why it was difficult in Cleveland. And by the way, I've had Kyrie's side on the Cleveland thing. LeBron can sit there and say he was hurt by Kyrie. LeBron's crew would say, hey, we're the ones that got him the sneaker deal. We're the ones that put him in a position to win. That guy was going to score a ton of points, win like 30 games in Cleveland. LeBron's crew, I believe, like, they're right on that part of it. But the part that I don't think they're totally honest about is that, look, you guys had Kyrie out of there, and LeBron was doing year to year, which was driving a guy like Kyrie crazy. So it's like, one, you almost had me traded, and two, you're doing year to years, and this whole thing revolves around you deciding what you want to do every single year. Like, I'm out. I don't want to be part of this. And I don't blame Kyrie at all for deciding that he would want to do that, because that would just plain get old. It just would. But to see Durant in that video go, yeah, we're going to see, though. Like, he's like, oh, man. And it's so weird that I've had a lot of people say, no, it's fake. It's actually not true. There's no way that's actually true. That's just Kyrie that's messing everybody. I think you're wrong there. I just think you're wrong. I don't think they're messing with everybody. I think it's just a different way of doing things. And Kyrie, on top of everything else, every time he makes some kind of statement, he always has to follow it up with some kind of correction from his own statement. So if you're going to be a philosopher, stick to the philosophy, stick to the teachings. Wu-Tang didn't come back like on a Tuesday to the Village and go, you know what? Maybe our style's wrong. You know, they had a concept, a philosophy. They believed in it. Right or wrong, they stuck to it. And so next time Kyrie says something that everybody's like, what? I want him to stick to it more. I don't care how crazy it is. I want him to go, yeah, no, that's what I meant. Because every time he's done one of these things, he's like, well, that's not really what I meant. We're like, well, you're the one that said it. You're the one that said it. Although, look, if somebody speaks for a living, there are times where I'm like, yeah, it's kind of, could have done a better job with that. I didn't mean to do it. But I'm also not saying stuff like, we don't really need a coach. And then he's like, oh, 2 days of Steve Nash. Oh, now I get it. This coach thing. Okay, yeah, now I'm on board. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did. And even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. This actually worked out. I'm excited about this. Sent a DM to a comedian who I think is funny. His name is Nate Bargatze, and he is the star of The Tennessee Kid on Netflix. He has a bunch of stand-up specials, a bunch of videos as well. And I hit him up, and he was like, yeah, no problem. You know what the great thing is his people. Kyle reached out to the people. We had people reaching out to people, and They were like, no, he's not available right now. And then Kyle was like, hey, just got in touch with Nate. Said he's totally cool to do it. I was like, all right, good stuff. So that's what we're going to do. You can follow him at Nate, and that's B-A-R-G-A-T-Z-E. In extensive research for this interview, I always like to understand people's backgrounds. And I think anybody that's like, hey, I want to be an actor, I want to be this. And it's like, oh, your parents must be psyched, because they're like, but your dad was legitimately a magician.
Yeah, yeah, he still is. He's actually president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, IBM, right now. He's this is a big organization, and with all magicians around the world, and he's the president of it. He's very much in the magic world, man. I mean, I grew up with all that. Just, you know, it's funny. He's like, when I first started comedy, I didn't even do jokes about him being a magician, because it was so normal that I didn't think it was weird. And then it was like, I told someone else later, and they're like, yeah, dude, that's crazy. Like, that's not. And I was like, oh, is it? Oh, yeah, maybe I should talk about it. But it was, yeah, it was very normal growing up.
Because I had this feeling for a while that people are very anti-magician. Like, they may like the act, but then they don't necessarily like the person. Like, they're afraid of them. Like, I remember when I used to bartend years and years ago, there would be this dude who would just show up and do card tricks, and it was his way of hitting on women. And eventually we were kind of like, hey, man, like, you can't just come here by yourself and get like one Michelob Ultra and do magic tricks like at the bar. Like, this kind of sucks. It's bumming people out.
Yeah. The fact that it would bum people out is great. Like, it's like, what? I just had a couple beers with my guys. Like, you know, you had one beer.
He was always alone, though. Yeah. That was the thing. He was a bad tipper. So we were like, oh, great, the magic guy's here. So were you, when you had buddies over and stuff as a kid, would your dad like break it out or what? Like, how would that work?
Yeah, he would always do it. I mean, we still do it now. Like, you know, if you came over, I'd be like, I'd show Ron some tricks, and, you know, we would be, you would see it, and like, everybody sees it. He loves doing it. You know, we're proud of it. But yeah, growing up, I mean, he would try them out on us. That's what I always say. I can't do magic. I can ruin it for you, though, because it was ruined for me. I mean, I just don't enjoy. I'm very impressed at what he does. I am impressed by magic, but I mean, I still have a lot of magicians will come up to me and be like, oh, let me show you something. You're like, dude, me and my brother, someone recently just showed me and my brother, and we're like, out of two people, you know, I have a sister too, but like, me and my brother just sitting there where you're like, all right, man, yeah, let's see what you got. You know, we just don't, you know, it's like, I just don't care. Like, there's no excitement we really give back, because it's like, I don't know, man, I've seen him not work. I mean, he used to always be trying all these tricks at home, and like, you'd watch, you know, because he was coming up when I was a little, and he would do these tricks, and you'd see him just, he'd be like, he couldn't get it to work. And then, so, I mean, I'm like seeing the process of magic, like behind the curtain. And so you're just, now it's just not as like glamorous as it was. He did do all our birthday parties, because he was a clown when I was like five. He would do clown. He doesn't like, I have a special called Full-Time Magic. And that's from that, like saying, like he finally became full-time magic, but he was a clown. And so, I mean, every birthday party was my dad being a clown. I mean, everyone, so much that you go, I don't want this anymore. You know, I don't want my dad, you know, I mean, I remember I'd be sitting on, we were at a playground one, and my dad's doing a magic show, and I'm like on a swing by myself at my own birthday. Cause I'm like, I've just seen all these tricks, man. Like, I don't, you know, I don't do stand up for my daughter. Like, it just, I'm like, let me do 5 minutes. Let me just ask her for next year, her 9-year-old birthday. I'm like, let me just, I got some new stuff I'm working on. I just want to see how it goes with these little kids, you know?
Full-Time Magic would be a great name of a special.
My Comedy Central special. It was called Full-Time Magic, and it aired the same night of the Mayweather Pacquiao fight. So, I mean, I didn't even watch it, if that tells you anything.
Well, now I feel great, because maybe my research wasn't as extensive as I thought it was. Because here I'm like, hey, that'd be a great name. You're like, yeah, actually, dude.
It was 1987, Ryan. That's when I started comedy, and that was my first album. I wish you cared at all. Now, no one knows that. What's kind of cool is no one knows, I mean, like the fans and people that knew me before Netflix obviously know that special, and the Sirius Radio plays a lot of that stuff. But it's kind of, I mean, I have an hour special that not everybody knows that I have. It was on Comedy Central. They aired it that night of the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and that was like it. Like that was the, they, we told them it was like, it's not, you know, I said, hey, it's a pretty big fight, you know, that we're going up against.
One of the bigger ones.
One of the bigger ones. And then Comedy Central, they go, ah, it's like $100 though. That's kind of expensive. I was like, I don't know if they thought it was like $100 a person. I was like, if you get 10 guys, it's $10. I was like, we're not in a third world country where they can't, 100 people can figure out how to pay $100 for the, you know, the biggest fight in a decade or so. And so I remember I watched the fight. They agreed to air it back to back. And like, so at midnight and then 1 a.m. And then I watched the fight. And I mean, dude, the fight started the second my special started. The second. And I mean, just really, you know, put it out and then just needed to go to Netflix after that. So
before I get to some of the stuff that I really like, I do like the background part of it, because clearly with that performance family, like they'd be more excited about it. But in the beginning, like, look, I think you're hysterical. That's why I wanted to have you on. And I can tell you kind of how I was introduced to you. But were you the funny guy in the group? Because I also, like, I'll remember when I was bartending, I go, you know, I'd like to be a talk show host one day. And my buddies would be like, hey, look, like, cool, you watch a lot of baseball. But, I mean, yeah. Shut the fuck up. Nobody wants to. Yeah. I don't want to hear what you think about anything. Yeah. And, I mean, because you're funny, but you're also, like, I don't know the best way to, it's not just dry. It's you're not just out there like a joke machine. You're telling stories. But were you the guy in your group that was funny? And did your buddy say, like, look, we may laugh and stuff, but like, you're going to be a comedian. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's, you know, I would, you know, when I would always joke about going to Zany's. I definitely would get laughs. And I remember, you know, one of the first times I remember in a way of doing stand-up, I remember I was at like a party. We had a party at my parents' house. My parents were out of town. And so, you know, I had a party at their house, got super in trouble. My sister that's 9 years younger than me just ratted me out. She was like too young to completely know what she was doing, but just, you know, crushed me. I remember like telling a story or something on the porch that night, and everybody was really laughing. And I really think back to that and going like, man, that was like kind of the first where I was like, you know, I'm telling the story. I mean, all of my buddies are laughing. It's the people that knew me are laughing. And the next week we go to some other parent's house party and we're with kids from another school. And a guy and my buddy goes, tell that story you told last week. And I try and just, it bombs so hard. And these other, cause I'm with kids that I don't go to school with, so they don't know me. And I mean, I just, it was brutal, dude. I just was like flying through the story. And it was almost like you're like, oh, that's what it is. That's what stand up is. You got to make people that don't know you and grow up with you. Like same thing that you got to do. You got to, people that don't know you have to want to listen to what you're trying to say. So there was a little bit of me wanting to be a stand-up comedian, and it wasn't that crazy for some people to think that I did want to do that. But most stand-ups were not the most fun people to be with. You know, if you ask my wife about it, like they think, but you know, I think girls are just like, what is it? Just a fun time over there. And she's like, I mean, like, what are you out of your mind? It's the worst. It's not fun at all. It's, you know, you're not, cause you can't be on. I always say, my wife always says, I give her 30 seconds of fun, which is one of the meanest. It's more than that, but she jokes. That's one of the meanest. I tell her, I go, that's pretty mean that you just, she'll go 30 seconds of fun. And I'm like, all right. But I say my fun is just at a high level though. I don't mind, I bring a ton of jokes, but the jokes I bring are, they're professional jokes, you know?
Right. Right. High level. So I know you guys all think you kind of suck deep down, right? Like that's kind of the case. Do you feel like other comedians look down on you? Cause you don't talk about therapy enough.
Oh dude, therapy makes me furious.
Only reason I'm saying that is because we didn't meet, but the reason we linked up is I saw Dan Soder. I was in the city for like an ESPN deal. I walked up. I was like, I'm just going to go watch 10 comedians. You know, like sat by myself, solo guy, you know, and I, you know, you have to put your drink order in, and every single guy before Dan male, female, anybody was like, so my therapist says, and I'm like, look, I'm not trying to dump on the industry, but I just go like, hey, man. And then when I, the thing I like so much about you is that you may be fucked up, but you're not like sharing how, like the whole thing isn't a sharing part of it. So that's kind of my, like, I'm making a bit of a joke about it, but it's amazing how much of that seems to be in stand up now.
Oh, dude. I mean, the fact that that's, you want to talk about this. I mean, I love it. I didn't know if you were going to be like this dick,
you know?
Well, so me and Soder's one of my best friends. And, and so I talked to Soder about therapy. Like,
Cause he didn't do it. He didn't do it. Like he was the headline at the end. And I was like, finally, you know?
No, Soder's super funny. HBO, he's got HBO special out. It's unbelievable. And then, but I was talking, we talk about like, cause therapy to me is, look, I'm not saying it's not something that that's good. I think it is a good thing and people do need it, but it's the talking about it. I always think of it with comics as like, dude, not everybody can afford therapy. Not everybody can go do, you know how good of a life you have to have? That you go, you know what? I want to get my feelings in check. You know, it's just what insane life that you live, that you get to go blame your poor parents that just didn't have money. And you're like, I'd like to figure out, you know, I want to blame everything on them and not take any responsibility for anything. That's what I think therapy is to me. It might not be that. And I'm not saying I would never not do it. I'm not like, I if you have a crazy childhood or some stuff like that, if you can, you have a lot going on, maybe you do need it. But I think majority of people is, it's insane. And it is, because I don't talk about it because there is, there's a lot of comics that talk about therapy. And it's, to me, I'm like, they talk to an audience and I'm like, dude, the guys I grew up with, I would be embarrassed to go to them and go like, oh, I just want to talk to my therapist. I mean, it would be insane. And that's what these people don't have. I always think this with celebrities. There's a huge disconnect with celebrities. They get so famous and so rich, and they have no ounce of reality. They don't. There's nothing that they do that's normal. And that's the ones that are telling people to vote and stuff is like ridiculous. Like where it's like, don't tell anybody to vote, dude. Just shut up. Everybody knows. Everybody, if you can log in Instagram, I'm sure you've heard that there's voting happening. You figured that out. So like, we don't need you. Showing me you're dropping your ballot off like you're, hey, you know what?
I think this is, I don't know how this goes over, like people listen to this, but I'm totally with you. And it doesn't mean that you don't think people should vote. It doesn't mean that you don't think people should go to therapy. But like when I think of some of my friends that are really famous with a huge following, and then I think like when you wake up, do you go, okay, all right, to-do list. Let's see if the president misspelled anything in a tweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let me make sure everybody stays in. Got to make sure everybody stays inside, even though I'm not going to probably because I got a cool party to go to late. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I'd like to think, and maybe it's just, hey, you have this platform, you have this voice, and you should share it with people to do the right thing and all these different things. But I personally would go, I wouldn't want to start my day with making sure, like, hey, you need to hear from me on every fucking thing that you're not even coming to me for. You're coming to me for sports. I'm coming to you. Like for me to go, I'm going to spend my day making sure you understand all these things that I think are important. It blows my mind.
The word platform is a problem. There's too many people that technically can have a platform now. And so they think they have to use their platform. I would technically have a platform. My platform is to let you know, I don't care if you vote. I don't care if you do therapy. It's not my business. I have a Vandy shirt. I'm a big Vandy fan, but I barely made it out of high school. I could never get into Vandy. I had trouble getting into community college. I mean, we had to finagle our way into community college. I made it 1 year, no credits. There's zero reason that I should ever tell you what to do as a person that we don't live the same life. It's just, there's no reason ever to say it. And there's not enough people, not enough like celebrities that go, you know what, man, do whatever you want, dude. If you want to vote for, I don't care who you want to vote. You want to write in your neighbor's name, then do whatever you want to go do. It's not my decision. It's not my, you know, it's like, I don't know you. So like, we don't live that. We don't have the same reasons. These people, one thing that I think that hurts them, they don't have any regular people in their life. That's a gigantic thing. You need to keep your like buddies from home. You got to keep them in your life. You got to keep some regular people in your life because they get where it's like, did you see this on Twitter? And you need to like someone else. It's like, dude, I was at soccer practice for 9 hours with my daughter. I don't even know what Twitter is. You need someone to yell that back and you go, oh yeah, you know what? That's right. Cause he's like, I worked 50 hours this week. You got to have regular people in your life to remind you that you are an idiot and your whatever you say means nothing. It means nothing at all.
Yeah, man. I thought that actually tied together well. I didn't expect that question to go that
I didn't expect that. You got, I mean, the therapy, I was like, here we go. I don't know if I'm doing a new joke about it with like Tom Cruise. Like I love like just Tom Cruise, like the reality of like what I like Tom Cruise a lot. And I've always heard he's a great guy. And I heard if you met him, he's like the most charming person ever. I've never met him, but I know someone that did meet him. They're like, dude, you're like, oh, we're going to be best friends. But Tom Cruise, like, there's no reality with that guy, man. That guy doesn't. I don't know if he knows what cash is. Like, there's a chance. He's been famous for 40 years. And I don't think Tom Cruise really, I don't hear him say a lot of politically.
And we're talking about the rant that came out yesterday, right?
Oh, I didn't even hear the rant.
Oh, you didn't hear the rant? Oh, okay. No. So go ahead.
But the COVID, that's just kind of timing out together. So, yeah. So maybe I'll hear that. And I'll be like, never mind. But like,
well, if you watch a Scientology documentary, you might not like Tom Cruise as much after the fact.
Dude, you give me a room, Tom Cruise. I would tell you, don't let me in there because I'm coming out a Scientologist. That's what's going to happen. That's how much scared I would be like, don't let me go in there, dude. If I go in there, there's no way I'm telling him no. I think he's that good that I'm going to walk in there and be like, I don't see how y'all are not all Scientologists. I love the idea, though, of like how much money someone like it's been. I mean, dude, I'm 41. My whole life, he's been super famous. And I mean, there's just no way he knows how much gum costs. You know, I think if you told him gum was $100, I think he would think that's pretty good. He's like, oh, yeah. still $100? Like, he just would have no idea. Oh, God. All right. I thought it'd be up more. And you'd be like, he doesn't know what money is. Dude. Like, and that kind of person is the person that I think should not say anything. Besides, now he's ranted about something. But
yeah, he went off about people not wearing masks on the set of Mission Impossible. That's another.
The mask thing, dude, they keep yelling at people. They're like, why wear your dumb mask? I'm in Nashville. Everybody's wearing masks. I went to a NASCAR race and everybody had masks on. They're sitting outside. And these are the people that you would think not wearing masks. People are wearing masks, man. There's a guy here and there that doesn't want to wear it and wants to argue with you about wearing a mask. There's people that are like that. But in the most part, everywhere I've been going, I mean, I'm seeing people wear their masks. I don't, you know. Let's quit yelling at everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwiches done right can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced. Butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. This episode is brought to you by Crown Royal. This NBA season, Crown Royal is celebrating the loyal fans that show up for every tip-off. I love every tip-off. I love every one of them. And people ask me, hey, are you tipping off tonight? Because they know that's code for, are the games on? And I'll say, yeah, come on over. Bring your kids. I don't care about the audio feed. You can walk in front of the television. Because this time of year, the second half of the NBA, it's about family. And that's one of my favorite things about my life. Crown Royal believes if you live generously, life will treat you royally. Visit crownroyal.com to get ready for tip-off. Please drink responsibly. I did love that you updated some of your material to deal with COVID. The line, and it's you, it's classic you in that the line itself, if you wrote it down, you'd be like, well, that's not funny. And I'm going to share the line. Like, I don't want to deliver your material. But when you were basically saying like everybody's decided they may have had it at some point, and everybody's an exaggeration as part of the performance. But that line, we were like, yeah, February. Sneezing a lot. It was perfect. And it was hilarious, not because it was more than just an observation. It was the delivery. It was all part of that. And going back and looking at your videos, like when you watch yourself now, do you go, oh, like I, whenever it clicked, it's clicked for years. I have it. Where if you had delivered that kind of line in the beginning, I'm sure this is probably true for comedians, but I know a lot of people like us in our industry, we hate watching old video of ourselves. Some people can't stand to listen to themselves. Do you hate watching your stand-up career at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have the first time I ever went on stage.
Well, what was that? Tell us that story.
On VHS. It's on VHS. It was, I lived, moved to Chicago. I started, there's a guy, still does lessons, comedy college. This guy, Jim Roth, he's in Milwaukee, in Chicago. And I took classes. And you don't need classes, but when you're first starting, it's just, I moved to Chicago. I didn't know what to do. And it was like nice to be with other people that are just starting out as well. So you kind of like at least have a place to go and you're being held accountable, because at the beginning, you don't want to go on stage. I mean, you're nauseous every night. I mean, you're so nervous to go talk in front of everybody. So you need someone to kind of force you to do it. But so when I started, I mean, the beginning, I have a chin beard. I mean, this is like 2000.
Oh, like a strap?
Yeah.
Like a little Limp Bizkit deal or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. Limp Bizkit was pretty big when I started.
So. No, so it played. It played. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Everybody had. But it's there. I forget my set. Yeah, it would be. I couldn't watch it. I'm so young. I look down the whole time. The whole time I'm looking down. Because I'm just so nervous. And I don't like listening to myself now. I can watch. Like when the Tonight Show came out, or I'm having to go through we just shot a special. And so I got to go through that to like kind of keep an eye on how the editing's going of it and stuff, or whatever. You do two shows usually and you kind of just make sure it's all looks good and whatever. And so sometimes those are hard. My last special, actually, I had my opener edit it. Like I had him go through it because I was like, I can't. It's just too much. Like and he was with me a lot. And so I was like, you just go watch it and see, because it was like it's too much to watch. And, you don't like hearing yourself. I've gotten a lot better than I was at the beginning, but you know, now you're just watching higher production stuff. So you're on the Tonight Show, it looks better. So it's a little bit easier to watch than you're watching some like grainy video and you're like, oh God. And then you sound awful.
I think the first thing I saw you do that I just was dying was when, and I don't know if it's a true story or not. I mean, I imagine there's a lot of creative license and like something that sort of happens, and then how
everything I do is true.
Okay. So the story about you being mistaken for the guy's wife, was that when a Walmart parking lot? What if I was like,
accept that one, dude. Sorry. I'm joking. You're like, all right, dude, you picked the one. No, that was.
So what was it? Olivia. So set it up.
Olivia, where the guy, I'm standing at the, I go golfing and I'm standing with my shirt off at the trunk of my car. And this old man just comes up and just goes, Olivia. And and I turned around and I was like, what's that? And he's looking at me. He thought I was his elderly wife. He was like 80 and he's looking for his elderly wife and saw me with no shirt on and thought, I mean, there she is. me and her apparently have similar body types. And she has a little hair on her back, to be honest. But that's exactly true, dude. That happened. I actually golfed in West. I was in like West Palm Beach. I was driving to Tampa the next day. So I went and golfed that morning. And then I go drive to Tampa. And I was like, my car is like up there. And that guy does all that stuff. And I was like, God, that's so funny. And I asked the kid, there was like a kid that worked there, and I asked him, I said, hey, did that guy just call me Olivia? And the kid was embarrassed. Like, he doesn't know I'm a comedian. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. I don't know what that guy's problem was. And I was like, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And it was 2 months before I taped the special. And I opened the special with that joke on the Tennessee kid, which is pretty crazy. Sometimes you get lucky and it's.
So you knew immediately. You knew immediately. Okay. Right.
I called some people on the way to Tampa. I was doing a show in Tampa. And I called some people because I just told them, like, I'll do that. I just called some friends, tell them the story, what happened. I'm kind of trying to say it, how I'm going to say it on stage that night. And then they're laughing. And you're kind of like, that's funny, right? And they're like, yeah, dude, that's really funny. I'm like, all right. I'll call like soda, you know. And then I tried it that night and I on stage and it worked. And I just knew, I was like, that's the opening joke. That's a perfect opening joke to say. And so, yeah, some stuff you got to mess around with. And then some stuff like that, it just happens, man. And you're like, anybody could tell that kind of, it'd be funny. You know, it's just.
Yeah, that was killer. Cause it was your delivery. Like, you don't really know when the punchline's coming, which I think is what makes you really good. And I'm kind of thinking back, like, hey, do you have to go back and watch? You don't really have to if you're a comedian, because you can just see. You can hear it, you can see it, and you're like, all right, well, that killed. Yeah. So what?
You feel it. And then you do it. I've been trying to, so I do, like, when you build a new act, I'm trying to get better this time around and listening to some stuff. And I'll go back and listen to see what, just to make sure I didn't forget anything. But when you're doing comedy as much as, I mean, now it's not like normal. When you're normally on the road, I mean, now you're doing, you know, 4 to 6 shows a week. I'm doing an hour every week. I mean, I got a pretty good memory of, you know, it's my world. So it's like kind of easy to be like, no, you know, I always change some stuff up here and there, but you kind of get it. And then you fill it out and, you know, but a big problem is where I'm at in comedy that you do got to be aware of is, now that people laugh at you because they know, now they know you. So now you're back to the way like performing in front of your high school friends. And so like where now these people know you and they're going to laugh easier than they ever would have. So you have to make sure that your material stays up to par to be above that, because that's where you can start slipping, is you start getting laughs in some places that are really not funny, but people like you. And so they laugh at it. And that's a slippery slope into being 6 years from now, you're just like garbage, and then you had no idea, and then everything starts dwindling down. So you have to be super aware to be like, I need to make sure this joke works. Like, I can still go up in front of people that don't know who I am. If I go pop into shows, it's not like I'm Jerry Seinfeld, but you have to make sure that you at least are aware that, you know, I can't rely on just like your fans laughing at you, you know.
I'm sure you've done this before, but what's your best bombing story?
You know, it's funny. I mean, there's just so many when you,
what's it like? Like, can you give me one that you can remember mentally? Like, you're looking out and you go, I wish this was over, and it's not, you know.
One was the first, when I first moved to New York, I used to hand out flyers at Boston Comedy Club. So if you watched Pete Holmes Crashing on HBO, I did that with Pete Holmes. I was with Pete doing that. You hand out flyers, get people in the shows. And I remember one night going up there and so we would get to go on stage. We'd hand out flyers for all night and then we'd get 5 minutes at the end of the night. And so everybody's going up and everybody's like murdering. I mean, they're just all destroying. And I'm like, this, you know, someone goes up that, what, I didn't think it was that good. And then she did really good. And I was like, you know what? I was like, dude, I'm going to murder. If they like that, I'm going to murder. And I go up and bombed so hard. And I mean, zero laughs at all. And then I got off, and that was the first real hard bombing. And I got off stage and I had to go walk around the village. I hurt in my stomach. I threw that shirt away I wore. I thought maybe it's the shirt. And then I was like, I'll never wear that shirt again. I mean, that one like is one that like, it hurts, you know. I mean, it like hurt. It physically hurt. Later on, it happens so much. You're in just bad situations where stuff, you know. I mean, I would do shows at bars. I mean, we did one show at a bar and the stage was in the middle of the bar. It was almost like, would be like almost like a strip club. There's an old strip club where they have like the pole and then the bar is like around, like the bartender walks around the stage. Yeah. So it was like that. So we performed in the middle, but they had wine glasses hung up above. So if you stood up, people couldn't see your head. and so the whole show, you got to like kind of crouch down and you're just bending down a little bit. And yeah, so you're telling all your jokes from just a weird angle. And I mean, that one's tough. That one was, you know, that was definitely not. You lose some laughs when you're making facial expressions to the back of wood. But
you said something, though, that definitely relates to my, like, my business, I will see people be like, you are the best. We're so lucky to have you. No one does a better job. So-and-so did this. You have, and I'll be like, you hate that fucking person.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You don't like, you've talked to me about that person. Yeah. So either ignore it or, you know, like, I have to imagine that's a big part of comedy. Cause like deep down you and other guys would be like, this person isn't as good. I mean, some of it can be competitive. Some of it can be jealousy. And also with comedy, I mean, there are just different styles that work where you're like, hey, this person's really successful. I don't necessarily get it, but whatever. But how much of that is a part of comedy where it probably drives you guys nuts when you know people behind the scenes don't like that other person, but they're just trying to latch on just to be approved?
I mean, overall, you know, that's the, at the beginning, you hate everybody. And then the longer you get into it, you know, when you're first starting, dude, you're just like, this guy stinks, dude. He stinks. Like, you think you're, you know, and you're nowhere, by the way. You're doing nothing. You're making $800 a year in comedy randomly. And so, but the longer you get into it, I really respect the longevity of guys. So guys that, you know, like that are doing it forever. You're like, yeah, dude, that's, you know how hard that is? We're making a career out of nothing. It is nothing. I am tricking people into paying to come see me tell jokes. It's, no one needs me. That's, I've always lived by that motto. No one needs me to do comedy at all. I'm a, I got to make myself where you want to come see me. And if you don't ever want to come see me, like, that's on me. Like, it's not on you. And so, the longevity, you start kind of respecting that a little bit more, where you start seeing guys where you're like, yeah, that guy might not be my cup of tea, but it's like, I get why people like him, and you know, that stuff like that. But for me, like with comics, I like guys that, you know, if it's like a Chappelle, Burr, it's guys that are really trying to do it forever. I mean, Louis was like that, like where it's guys that are trying to be the best stand-up comics. That's what I want to do. That's what you want to be. Gaffigan, Brian Regan, like these guys where you're, you know, you, I don't know if you could ever really have like Mount Rushmore of comedy. There's just, it's so subjective. But if you want, if someone's talking about the greatest comics of all time, you at least want your name to be thrown in with the other names. And that's so, like, when I look at that, that's going after that. Like Jim Carrey was like a funny stand-up comic, right? But it would be a comic that I would like be annoyed with because it's like, then he quit. Letterman was like that. Letterman was this stand-up comic, then he gave up on it. So, like, I always like Leno, because you know what? Leno kept doing it. Like, Leno always kept doing stand-up, and he never left it. And so I like that. I like, you know, when someone leaves it, to me, it's like, you know, you're like, I don't know. Like,
so if you get a huge movie deal, you'd be like, no way. I'm not going to.
No,
like
you
Jim
go
Carrey.
Do that stuff, but you go do stand-up. You go do all that. You can do all that stuff and never quit your stand-up. I mean, Seinfeld
had,
he had the greatest TV show of all time. Like, and he did, and now he's back doing stand-up. It's like, that's what you want, is like just the people that love it. Jay Leno hosted Tonight Show, did stand-up every week. It's I don't know, it's something like that. I get, now that being said, I understand Steve Martin quitting. Steve Martin got about as big as you can get. It was like not even a show anymore. He's going out to these stadiums, and it's, I mean, you might as well just play a video of them. I mean, there was no what you're going for. I mean, it's just this gigantic thing. So, or Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy is still one of the greatest, but Eddie Murphy got so big that I think if you get that big, I kind of get it, where you're like, dude, I don't know what else to do. I can't even go do a regular show. It's just too hard. Like,
it's like Chappelle a little bit too. Yeah. Where you just go, you know what? If it's not on my terms, I don't really want to do this anymore. And
Chappelle, that's the ultimate dream. I mean, he just goes, I want to do a show tomorrow in Nebraska. And it happens. And like, that's what you want to do. Bill Burr would do that with, you know, me and Burr have been to Daytona 500 and Talladega. And I went and opened for him both. So he just books a show the day before Daytona 500. I opened for him at that show. Then we go to the race. And Talladega was the same way. We went to Atlanta, did a show, and then the next day we drove to. So Burr, if he wants to go to a football game, he just books a show the day before that football game. And so when you can get that big, where you can know you can sell those tickets, I mean, that's the next step you want to get to. You know, I want to go follow Vandy's schedule. Just no one's even down there except me. Like, just, but like, I mean, I could
do halftime.
I know, they're like, dude, we're wide open, dude. Like, if you want to come down, I mean, but there, you know, you want to go do that, where you want to go, like, I want to go, you know, to the Orange Bowl, night before I'll do a show. And then, you know, and then you're, it's, that's the dream right there.
I think you're going to get there. I really do. I have a great eye for these things. I have two more things before we finish up here. You're doing some stuff now, like you've been trying to get through this. So how have these appearances been? I don't know what the very latest to the date is for you, but I know that through this past year, you've been getting out. I've been watching some of the videos. You've done some social distance stand up. So how has that worked and what are you doing now?
Now I'm done. And then, so we did a bunch of drive-in movie theaters and
that was
so
cool.
Yeah, it's fun, man. At first, when it first started, it was like a couple of them where you're like, all right, you got to get used to it. But I went, you know, it was, that's all how you go into the mindset of it is you got to go in the mindset of like, these are not going to be normal. You're not going to be able to really hear anybody laugh and you're going to just do it. And you're happy to get out. And these people are happy to come to a show. And I mean, one of the best shows we had was in Chicago. I mean, it was 45 degrees, raining. Everybody's kind of staying in their cars. Some people sit out front. People up in the front could sit out. So you hear some laughs, but people would honk for laughs. And it actually kind of worked. Like it was, I mean,
at first it threw me off when I watched a video. I was like, was this driving him crazy? But it was kind of funny. Like as I got used to it and you're out there, it's huge, you know?
Yeah. You just need noise thrown back at you. And it's, and once you hear the reaction, it like makes it where you go, oh, this is going good. And you can learn because it's about us. It's like our timing comes off the audience. And so it made it be where we were able to time out because of that. And I mean, dude, it's 500 cars. And to see 500 cars honking and flashing their lights at when you go on stage, I mean, that's something that I'll never forget in my entire career. It was so unbelievable. And so the whole experience of it was unreal. Now, the flip side of it is when I saw people leave early. And I mean, that's tough because headlights just hit you right.
They're just driving.
Dude, I saw one guy had trouble finding the exit. He's just going back and forth. And it's just a truck just during the show, just driving back and forth. And he can't get out. And you're just up there like,
homeschooling.
I'm just up there like telling my dumb jokes. And he's like, back. You see him start backing up. And you're like, oh, God.
Reverse lights going.
Yeah.
This is the last thing. This is so stupid. So I was up in my house and I was watching your videos and you were getting changed in one of them on the road. And I know you talk about your level of fitness a lot. You were always impressed with the before guy.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was great. And then there was I don't know if it was a bad camera angle. James Harden's dealing with this a little bit right now where the angle was bad. It was a tough look for you. And and I got bummed out.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then after a minute, I was like, why the fuck are you bummed out? You don't even know him. Like, you're not friends with him. What were your expectations? Like, what, he makes fun of his lack of fit. Like, what were your expectations when he took his shirt off? Like, did you, so I don't know. I don't know why I'm sharing that with you.
Did you think it was as bad as you thought it was going
to
be?
My expectations weren't high to begin with. And then I was like, what the hell's going on? I was like, well, he's been on the road and now they're in this van, I think. And so I'm not.
We're on tour bus. I mean, yeah. So, I don't always like show that. It was like, that was like a funny, because Bert Kreischer takes his shirt off. So we like did that. I watched the video kind of briefly. I didn't want to watch it either. Like it's kind of, you're just trying to be funny. So, you know, it's, I didn't see the angle. Maybe the angle's bad.
I think it's a bad angle. Cause I don't think,
I don't think it's a bad angle. I think if you dove in there, look what you know, you want me to take my shirt off right now? Is that what you're asking? Like, you want to get,
maybe the second time, maybe the second time.
Cause
I don't know what it is. Like as you've seasoned, I think you look better. Like when it's like you went from age 25 to 45 in a week, but it looks better.
Well, I grew a beard. Well, so back when you first started in New York, you're just a mess, dude. You're like, you're out drinking every night till 5 a.m. And then you're eating just fast food, which I've still kept doing that. But you're still eating bad. And so you're just kind of a bloated mess.
But and you're then, so young in the face in those old videos. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I get made fun of that too. I've changed a lot of looks. That's what Katie Nolan, she says her favorite Nate is the Puka necklace Nate. I would wear that Puka necklace. I wore rubber bands on my wrist. Did you ever remember that being popular in high school? Like Kevin Garnett wore rubber bands.
That's exactly what it was. Because the NBA guys, like I always make this point, like in eighth grade or high school, we'd all do the same stuff. And then I always thought it was weird that 30-year-old millionaire NBA players are basically the same way. It's like, well, Kenyon Martin has two rubber bands now. Well, I have to have two rubber bands.
I had rubber bands until I was 30. So my problem is I hang on to stuff. It's like everybody's already veered off. And they're like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. And I'm like, dude, I've been doing it for 8 more years. Like, not, you know, not where it's like, dude, I look like a jerk. You mean y'all just quit last week? I mean, like, it's like 8 to 10 years I go past when everybody quit doing something. So I did all that. And then now I've like caught up. But yeah, the body, look, I am working out now. I worked out today. I've started working out. That body's going to come down, dude. I haven't started eating good. But once I start eating good, it's all going to come together. I'm going to take my shirt off. Next time it's going to be, I'll do my own before and after.
That would be great. It's just a before. Camera. Yeah, a before and then just a you have the next one say before, but it looks better. And you're like,
I'm not an after yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to like a high school picture and just throw that in there, you know, and just put that. It's funny, in high school, I don't think I have any pictures with my shirt off because I was more reasonable. And I was like, that's when you could have your shirt off. You have the body to have your shirt off. And weirdly, I've waited until my daughter was 8 years old. So she'll be embarrassed about that forever, you know.
I'm a huge Nate fan. You could check out his special on Netflix, The Tennessee Kid. Make sure you check that out and all the other videos. And I can't wait to see when this thing all gets, you know, we're all in the same thing trying to figure it out. So I really appreciate the time.
Look, everybody wear masks, vote, remember to vote. I don't know. I'm a big fan of you too, man. I'm very excited to talk to you. So that was awesome, dude.
Got some college football and life advice, remember, but by now you've probably heard about FanDuel Sportsbook, world-class sports betting app. Well, there's a reason why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel makes it easy to find and place your bets. They've got great odds on all different betting markets, unique fun-type bets like same-game parlay, and exclusive always-on promotions that let you get more action out of every game day. If you win, they even get you your winnings safely in as little as 24 hours. Each week, FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new users NFL odds boosts on the most relevant matchups of the week. This week, new users can get plus 1500 or 15-1 odds on either Kansas City or New Orleans. So that's a Chiefs Saints game. Just bet up to $10 and win up to $150. Even though this going to New Orleans, I'm going to say Kansas City. I think that Miami game was sloppy enough that Kansas City, even against the Saints defense, that Damian Woody said is the best in the NFL. Other people think it might be the Rams right now. Washington is worth mentioning. I'm going to mention them a little bit later. A State Farm piece. I'm going with the Chiefs because I just think the sloppiness of the Miami game, they're going to be tuned up a little bit more the week leading up to this game. All right, so there you go. If you never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, what are you waiting for? Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started. Be sure to sign up with promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N, so that they know that I sent you. If you like this podcast, if you sort of like it some days, or if you love it, that's a huge favor to us by going to the FanDuel Sportsbook app, downloading it using the promo code R-Y-E-N. That's Ryan. Must be 21 and older. Present in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, West Virginia, Indiana, Colorado, Iowa, Tennessee. Must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus $150. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado. 1-800-BETS-OFF, Iowa. 1-800-9-WITH-IT, Indiana. 1-800-GAMBLER, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois. Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789, Tennessee. Or visit www.1800GAMBLER.com. .net in West Virginia. Before I jump on the college football, James Harden returned to action, and La Houston Nostra is already at it down there, backing their guy, which I cannot believe that this player that wants nothing to do with you and everything was catered to him and you made every trade for him and moved all these picks for him. And then he's like, fuck it, I'm out of here. That Houston people are still defending this fucking guy. It actually blows my mind. Although I will stick up for Harden here. That first picture where he looked high key, as the kids say, thick, it might have been a bad angle, because then when he was warming up, the angle looked a little better. So there were a lot of Harden jokes out there. He looked a tad overweight, but it might have just been those tight fits, you know? People like compression shirts. People like to work out that way. They like to feel it on their body, you know. Baggy pants are out. So that could have been it. But the rest of the stuff, good luck with all that. All right, college football. The rankings came out late last night. No change in the top five. Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, and A&M. So the issues are Florida only dropping one spot after losing to a very disappointing LSU team this season. Iowa State scenarios at 8-2, sitting there at 6. And Cincinnati dropping from 8-9. And then Coastal Carolina moving from 13-12. So, like any ranking, if you want to find something wrong with it, you can definitely find something wrong with it. Stu Mandel at The Athletic, who's terrific at college football, has been forever. I'll cite him often. Is worth pointing out this point that he makes because he was upset about it. A bunch of people were upset about it. And I think sometimes being upset about it, it's like, okay, but what are we really talking about? Because I don't like doing a, hey, it's all going to work out. It doesn't really matter. It's just going to be Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State. Anyway, well, that's not the point. That's not the point of any of this stuff. Like, if that were the point, then none of us would talk about any of it or get upset about things. But when it comes to the rankings, people seem to get extra upset about it because I think they're always fighting for something that's not really part of it. And that's, hey, I want the little guy to have a chance. I think the system's telling us the little guy doesn't really have that much of a chance. And like I've said, I think I'm okay with that. So here's something worth looking at here. So the college football playoff, this is from Stu's piece, has never included a team that lost its conference championship game by any margin. All right. Notre Dame could be the first. So Clemson, if they lose a second time, is out. And then that starts turning into the Texas A&M Iowa State deal, which we'll get to here in a second. So, all right. So that hasn't happened. We haven't had a conference championship game loser get in. Notre Dame could have a close loss to Notre Dame and still stay in at number four. All right. It has never included a team that lost a regular season game to one of the other playoff teams. So say Clemson loses again, A&M moves from 5-4, and then that means Bama's going to play A&M. Cannell and I were over this last week, and I know that people say, oh, they'll never do that. They'll never want a rematch. I don't know why you say never, because I could totally see that scenario. And it's not like they can move Ohio State, or they can just move them to 4 to avoid the rematch. I mean, maybe they would do that, or maybe they'd say, you know what, Ohio State, it's all said and done, is 6-0, and A&M had played 10 games if they beat Tennessee this week, which is not exactly an impressive win. So that's never happened. And it's also never included a two-loss team, which we could have with Iowa State or Oklahoma sitting there at 10. Okay, but it's only been 6 years of the playoffs. So because these things have never happened, we have 6 years. I don't know that anybody would ever start making big time predictions based on what the future, like as much as we want to say the past predicts the future or the past has nothing to do with the future, because I've heard those concepts applied in different things all the time. But with sports, at least with this, to have 6 years of results for four selections, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. At some point, there is going to be a two-loss team in there. At some point, there will be a conference championship loser in there. If Bama loses to Florida, Bama's still going to be in. And I know that drives you crazy. And Florida might be out in that scenario. And that'll mean, well, what's the point? Well, what the point is that the committee is not going to use conference championships the way I think the public wants them to be used. From the very beginning, they said, our goal is to put the four best teams in. So if after all the results in a normal season, 12 to 13 game results, they're saying, okay, let's look at the full body of work. Let's look at this as a credit score. And what's on your credit score? Well, Iowa didn't pay some bills in the very beginning of the year. They lost to Louisiana, 31-14. But apparently the banks like what they've done a little bit more in the last 5 weeks, winning five straight. Alabama's credit score is impeccable. Maybe they lose to Florida in a close one. You say, oh, I missed a payment, but we're going to submit that as some kind of deal where the credit card made an error, so that'll be off your credit score next month, but not in 7 years like it happens with other mistakes that people can make. And they're still going to like Bama at 10-1. I just don't think the committee could tell you what you already know. And if the committee said, ah, you know, conference championships, they're part of it, which they've said, but it's not really that important, then people will go, wait, are you kidding me? Conference championships aren't important. They're already telling you conference champions aren't that important. They said four best teams. And that's the part of this where I've always been okay. Now, this is the part where it's pretty clear what they're doing here. And this is, I think, where the complaints are completely justified. The way they have this now with A&M in front of Iowa State, they could change that. I mean, A&M's going to have one win against top 25 team. And that's going to be against Florida. And if Iowa State beats Oklahoma, that would mean they have 4 wins against current top 25s, because that would mean Iowa State has 2 wins against Oklahoma. Oklahoma State's still in the top 25, and Texas is still in the top 25. Now, when you say it that way and you go, oh, wait, our team has 4 top 25 wins, which is exactly what I would be doing if I were a Cyclones fan, if you win that rematch, which I don't think you're going to win. I think Oklahoma's a better football team now, and you beat them 37-30 in the beginning of the year. I like Oklahoma in that game. I've had the Big 12 nailed all year. I've been good on the SEC. Pac-12, I've had no shot. ACC, I've been okay with. You know, Miami going into that game against North Carolina, I didn't expect it to be that bad, but I'd look at them and go, why are they ranked? Like, what are they ranked? Because eventually you run out of teams too. Like, everybody that gets mad about the rankings, go ahead and rank your own 25. Where do you start putting, like, what would you do with Florida after the LSU loss? Are you going to put them at 15? That doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. I mean, USC at 13 doesn't make any sense either, but I think the worst news for them is losing Washington and maybe playing a more talented Oregon team. And then, like, what does it cost USC? A 6-0 season when they weren't going to get in the playoff in the first place? So what's happening is it's setting up for a weird A&M Iowa State debate. You could say that as of right now, this means that A&M will still be in even if Iowa State wins the rematch with more top 25 wins. But it's, at least on these rankings, looks like A&M is more impressed with the one loss against their number one team in Alabama than the 2 losses with Oklahoma State and Louisiana for Iowa State. Florida stays in front of Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati hasn't played since November 21st, and it seems like there's been a committee correction going from being into Cincinnati to now no longer being in Cincinnati or being into them. I don't know if where they're located. I know they're not located in Cincinnati. It's Texas. But like, are you supposed to put Indiana ahead of Florida? I guess you could. That doesn't really bother me that much. I mean, is Coastal Carolina supposed to be 7? And would everybody be happier now knowing that they're not getting into the playoff anyway? Okay, I guess you could be happy there. I think the part where it feels a little calculated is the committee covering for themselves if they actually wanted to put Florida back into the top 4? And that's why they kept him in front of Georgia, where, look, they have the head-to-head on Georgia, but they want to keep him ahead of Cincinnati. Like, that's the one where if Florida beats Alabama, they can jump Iowa State. They can then not maybe care as much about A&M winning the head-to-head. I'm starting to ramble here a bit, so I'm going to stop myself. But I think it all comes down to, a lot of times, they're giving us the answers. They're telling us how they feel about things. And because they aren't being more transparent, you're mad about it. Like, what if they actually just said, yeah, you know what, the conference championships, it's not as big of a deal as you guys think it is. And they would just get crushed for saying it, when that's exactly what they're already saying. Now it's time for the State Farm Surprisingly Great segment of the week. Getting great car and home insurance from State Farm at a surprisingly great rate, that's like the surprise defense in the NFL, your Washington football team. Okay, I, like a lot of you, wrote off the entire NFC East because we should. It's not a great division. But there's a story going on from your first place leading Washington football team, and that story is on defense. Let's run over a million stats because they're all impressive. This is, without question, one of the 5 best defenses in the NFL. And I was dismissive of it at first because of competition and the fact that they weren't winning many games. So sometimes your defensive numbers don't really hold up. But over the course of almost a full season, these hold up. Defensive metrics, they're 4th. Number 2 against the pass, number 10 against the run. In some of the more traditional numbers, they're number 4 in yards allowed, number 6 in points per game allowed. They haven't been in the top 10 in either one of those categories as a franchise since 2009. They're 4th in opponents' yards per play. They're 6th in opponents' third down conversion rate. They were a terrible 4th quarter defense last year. Now they're the 6th best in the league. This is all while having their offense be 18th in time of possession. So it's not like the defense isn't out there all the time. They are out there a lot. This is the best number from this group. They're number 3 in red zone touchdown percentage allowed at 50%. Who's the worst? The Kansas City Chiefs actually are the best team in football, allowing opponents to score touchdowns 75% of the time they're in the red zone. So the Washington football team's only half at that number. All right. And the big thing is, we're talking about 5 guys in that front. They're all first-round picks. It's not just Chase Young, who had a remarkable weekend with a touchdown and just wrecking teams' offensive game plans. There are all sorts of guys on this team. Montrez Sweat, Also, Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne. You remember those guys from the SEC? Kerrigan has been picking it up a little bit. So this Washington football team has put together a defensive run that in the beginning I was skeptical of. But now when you check it out, we're almost done with the season. It is held up, and now they are in first place in the NFC East. State Farm agents provide personal service so you can customize your insurance to fit your needs. Like a GM putting together their very own roster, you need a team that supports you, and State Farm's got a great one. In addition to agency, award-winning mobile app helps manage coverage, pay bills, file claims, and more with a great price and even greater service. State Farm goes from strength to strength. Choose insurance that always brings its A game. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Our surprisingly great player from last week, it's not just a player, it's the entire defensive unit for the Washington football team.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life advice, rr at gmail.com. I have a couple heaters here. Really like them. This one I'm super fired up about. Actually, whatever. All right, here we go. My HOA is a problem. For people that don't know what the HOA is, when you live at a condo association, apartment, you know, you pay fees on top of everything else so that somebody's out there raking stuff. Sometimes it includes garbage. In Connecticut, we had a nice little pool. There was also a common area where you'd play billiards or maybe cards. I never went to any of those things, but I did jump in the pool every now and then. All right. So our guy is checking in saying the HOA is a problem. I've run into a financial and moral quandary and need your advice. Big fan. All right. So the story: built a backyard shed 2+ years ago in my house and fence after getting written permission from my HOA president and neighbors. Well, that seems okay. The shed aids in storage for my family's ever-growing tools, toys, and sports stuff. I'm 36-year-old insurance broker from Colorado, 3 boys. Shed stats, cement foundation. All right. Slab, or did you guys dig it out? Doesn't matter. Stands at 12x10x8. Architecture style mimics house with same roofing, siding, and paint, double barn doors, window. In August, I received a letter in the mail from my HOA management company threatening legal action and a $5,000 fine if I don't remove my shed in the next 2 weeks. Our HOA is small, only 68 houses on 4 streets next to a golf course. Dues are low and everyone gets along. I called the HOA president, basically said, "What the fuck, man? You said we could build the shed 2 years ago." He responded, "There's been complaints in the board and its management fine we're in violation of HOA covenants and needs to be removed." I'm no lawyer, but I've been awake my whole life, and simple Google searches and common sense show the decision is illegal. I don't know if that's true or not. I'll defer to you that you Googled it and you're more passionate about it than the rest of us are. Statute of limitations of Colorado for homeowners building an outdoor structure is 1 year. President and neighbors giving prior written approval, violation of primary. All right. I have a lawyer buddy named JW. He agrees the HOA is violating the law, and I have a slam dunk defense, but he cautions it'll cost a lot of money to fight in court, more money than the shed is actually worth. Apparently, HOAs are powerful and claim insurance to cover legal costs. And apparently, they suck big time, bro. I love my shed, but is it wise to use a chunk of our savings and upset some of our neighbors to fight for the shed's survival? Okay, look, man, I am totally on your side. I'm actually in a bit of an HOA battle myself right now. They sent... this is a contact information sheet. I haven't lived in this house in 2+ years, and they sent it to a different address and I didn't get any of it. And then I got something certified in the mail. It was like, we had a meeting about you and you were fined $25. And I was like, all right, whatever. I was fined $25. What I didn't realize, it was fined $25 a day. So that's been going on for like a month. I was like, hey, you know what? Can we come to a better agreement here? You sent it to the wrong stuff. We've updated the address. I filled out the new forms. And they're like, well, people weren't taking this seriously. We had to fine you. I was like, okay, well, now it's being taken seriously. And I didn't, you sent all the other stuff to the wrong address. So
now you have a bounty. You know,
there's, yeah, I was like, there's a reasonable way to handle this. And by the way, everyone can just handle it. Like all of you people are like, well, now that it's in the system, you're all full of shit. Okay. Someone can just say, yes, I now have as a person in power with the HOA can decide, let's figure this out. So I don't know how this thing's going to go. But I also know that, you know, I went back in the day with my HOA in Connecticut. Like when I was moving, I called up the Veterans Society because I wanted to donate a bunch of stuff that they could either use that I wasn't going to bring in the move, or they could sell. And there's this whole thing, you could look at it. If you have stuff that's laying around and you set up they actually like bring you the right bag so that they know what to pick up. And then you pick up a time, you just put the stuff in the driveway. They have people load it up and that's fine. So of course, when your boy did that for the veterans thing, trying to be nice and donate some stuff. And I was actually donating like nice stuff. I was just like, look, I'm over it. And the landscapers in the HOA started picking it off left and right. Like it was a flea market with no, I was like, hey guys, what are we doing here? And of course, they're just looking at me, walking away with my stuff, being like, hey, we don't speak English. I'm like, well, can you, what part of the not understanding each other is it that I'm asking you to put the stuff back on my driveway? And they're like, oh, and they just played dumb. And then finally, you're like, hey, look, guys, like, no, it's not garbage. And they're like, oh, okay, high five it out. Everybody's good. They did a painting thing. I think they hired two stone kids that may have been related to somebody else that painted the pillars in the front. Again, this isn't exactly like some southern mansion here. Little entry to the cement walkway. And they painted it, but they power washed it first, which was nice, except they didn't know how to use power washers. And they basically dented all of the wood with the pressure of the water into it. And I'd be like, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, we'll get another coat of paint on that. And like, no, you just ruined all the wood. Another neighbor decided to, with permission, change the back patio brick. And they went ahead and got the permission, put in the patio, and then got a letter like a month later from an HOA saying you owe $5,000 because of damage. And look, I'm just, you said 5,000. So it stuck in my head. It was thousands of dollars that they were accused of doing damage to. And the great thing is my friend that took the pictures, the before and after, showed that there was no damage done whatsoever. But here's what happened is that neighbors get involved. And this gets back to my favorite lesson in the book Sapiens, and that when we were upright, once the crew was 30 deep, people were just over it. Like, hey, what's going on with Ned? Well, he doesn't, you know, he's not bringing enough berries back, and he's not sweeping his cave. And you're like, ah, Ned sucks. And Ned's like, are they talking about me? Like, I always bring plenty of berries back, and I've been great on the hunt. And yeah, I like my cave differently, but it's my fucking cave. So why are they talking about me? And then it would just go back and forth, and Ned decides, all right, fuck it, I'm going to get my own clan. And then guess what happens to Ned's clan? People keep reproducing, and then they're at like 31, 40 people. And then Ned's like, you know, our stick inventory is low. Like, we need more sticks. This is ridiculous. And then they would break off. And basically the whole point of Sapiens is that once we were 30 deep, we couldn't control anything anymore. And we would just break off into clans. And then, you know, fast forward a few thousand years and there's 8 billion of us. It's the same thing with HOAs, because I don't care who you are, how nice you are to everybody. That number could be 40. It could be 200. When you put up a shed, if you change your back patio, or like me, I don't, that actually has nothing to do with it. I was just trying to give away free stuff, but there's going to be somebody else that you live next to that's going to have a problem with it. Okay. I'm surprised we get along as well as we do now. And no one thinks we get along, honestly, because I don't know. People are bored. Sometimes the HOA people just like to be fucking bullies about it. And it's stupid. And what happened here is somebody else, you got all the sign-offs, and then somebody else decided like, oh, I don't like that shed. It's in my sight line to the other stuff that I don't look at. And now it's a problem because maybe that person is bored. And maybe that guy's wife is leaving him and he's sitting around and he's 70. He's like, what can I do? I'm like, I know what I can do. I can write a letter and complain about this guy's fucking shed just because I feel like it. And now that I did that, now the HOA has to do it. The other thing with HOAs where I sympathize with them on this is that for our HOA listeners here that feel like they're getting beaten up unfairly, is that you don't want to say yes to something that maybe makes sense because now you're afraid there's going to be 68 sheds out there. That's why the NFL will do things where like, that's stupid. Why can't that guy just do this with his jersey? Or why can't he do that? It's like, well, if I let you do this, then somebody else is going to ask, well, how come he gets to do this, but I can't do that? And we're all a bunch of children. And that's why sometimes we need a little HOA in our life.
Is HOA, is it a name for a type of organization, or is it like the evil empire and it's all HOA? They all have like the same like lawyer network and whatever. Like, is the HOA the same everywhere, or is that just like a name for this organization that like keeps people's neighborhoods in check?
Wait, are you talking like, is the HOA the Illuminati?
No, not like, is it, I'm just saying like, is it a brand, or is it like,
no, type it's a homeowners. No, it's a type of thing, the homeowners association. So
it's not the same group. Like, it's not like an HOA. Columbus.
No. There's like one guy. It's like your shed. Like, all right, we got a shed in Colorado we need to deal with. No. It's just it's like a term.
Got it. I never owned a home. I don't know if you know that, but.
No, I get it. But here's the deal. Like, think of it this way. If you pay dues, well, dues aren't one thing. Like, if you pay dues at your country club, if you pay dues in a fraternity, if you pay dues as a union member, you know, you pay dues. Well, it's not just one guy. Like, you know, that guy is he owns dues. No, it's just the title of what it is. Everybody just calls it your HOA. Cause when you move into a place that's like communal living, you'd be like, okay, what are the HOAs? Cause I remember I was looking at, there was this very sliver of a chance that I would end up in Chicago. And just cause I like looking at real estate, I was like, all right, let me look. And I started looking at where I wanted to live. And I was like, these prices aren't as crazy as I thought they would be. And then I looked at the HOAs in Chicago. I was like, oh my God, like these are absurd. And sometimes the HOA, you're like, what is all of this going to? Like, I had a place in Boston where there were reserves, but they never wanted to use them. So, and now I'm giving you a lesson on finance stuff that I'm not even 100% sure about. So I'm just going to stop. All right. So back to the case. This is one of those classic life advices here. I think in these cases, you got to go back at them with an absolute sledgehammer. Let me give you another little story. When I lived in New Jersey for like a short 6-month stint, I didn't know if I was going to last. I didn't. I did 6 months. I signed the lease for 6 months. They had some absurd like 90-day out thing that you had to tell them you were renewing. And I was like, no, I'm not. And then because I didn't meet some stupid deadline about renewing, then that meant I automatically renewed. And then they tried to whack me with all of these fees. Because they're like, well, now you are responsible for the apartment, even though they're definitely going to be able to rent it out. It was pretty low income, back then. I mean, the whole thing. And I actually think they were doing it to mess with, because there was a lot of foreign people that lived in this complex I was in, because, you know, I didn't have any money and it was a place where people without money lived. And I was basically never there because I was at the ballpark nonstop. And as I was moving out, they're like, oh, no, you owe us all these fees. I'm like, how do I owe you all those fees? I told you when I signed the lease, I'm not renewing. I told you at this point, I'm not renewing. And they're like, yeah, but there's another deadline in there. And you're like, this is such bullshit. So they tried to sue me. And then I came back at them and wrote a letter demanding back payment for stress. I mean, I've never done anything like that before, but I just got so sick of them. I was like, I actually want interest on the deposit that hasn't been released. I calculate the interest at this absurd rate. I want back pay for moving expenses. I just started listing stuff I was going to charge them for and come back at them for. And it went on and on and on. And they finally gave up. I forget who taught me that. It had to have been some agent or something, but this is way before I was really even in the industry. When you're in this kind of a fight and when you're right, like some people do it when they're wrong too, where you just got to go back at them and say, okay, here are the facts. You approved it, neighbor's approval, blah, 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 blah. You are going to have to pay for removal. You are going to have to pay for reseeding. You are going to have to pay for all of this stuff. So if you want me to take this down, not only am I not paying your fine, you're going to have to pay for all the removal. And you could also do it in a nicer way, which I wouldn't, because it doesn't sound like you're wrong here at all. I think there's a way you go around to every single neighbor and be like, look, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. And I'm sorry I have a shed and maybe you want a shed too, but I got approval on all this stuff. So I don't know, man. HOAs are bullies here. And I would fight this. But then again, you know, if you have a lawyer buddy named JW, why can't he help with this and not charge you a ton of cash for it?
Please follow up.
Yeah, please. Kyle is locked in. Okay, all right. We'll read this one because I was going to do a different one, but I'll do that different one a little bit later because there's some similarities. It's not another HOA thing. Like, hey, all right, coming up this week on the HOA part of the podcast. All right, checking in, Ryan. I've been contemplating this email ever since you started doing life advice. I never sent it because I know that my issue happens to most guys, but I think it's why I'm finally submitting it. I met a girl in high school who instantly became my biggest crush. She was gorgeous, funny, and could hold a conversation. When she was in the right mood, she was into me. She'd flirt with me, tell me she wanted to be with me. We even made a pact to get married. If they both weren't married by 25, they made a pact to get married. Then almost always ending up dating some guy, her interest would understandably drop off until I was in a relationship. So he went dot, dot, dot here. So here we go. She'd be in a relationship, her interests would drop off, makes sense, but then she would start to like you again once you were in a relationship. All right, bad sign. Then all of a sudden, she wanted me again. She'd flirt with me constantly and tell me how she could always make me happy. Surprisingly, I never cheated. Eventually, we went our separate ways to college and never hooked up. Fast forward, sophomore year in college. Uh-oh, here we go. I come home from school. You're so cool when you come home from college, like those first couple times. No one's cooler than freshman or sophomore. And by the time you're a little bit older, you're like, okay, wait a minute. I don't think I want to come home so that seniors in high school think I'm awesome. I come home from school, run into her at a party. I'm single, so is she. However, I tell her I'm not. Oh, look at our guy here playing the game. He tells the girl he's not single. Instant attraction from her end. We end up drinking, eventually, you know, start hooking up. Exactly how I hoped it to be, except somebody walked in midway through. She got embarrassed. I went back to school and hadn't talked to her since. Here's where my issue lies. I'm now in my mid-30s, engaged, have kids, and I'm happy. I actually love my life and being with my family. Last year, she randomly sends me a Facebook request. I accept thinking nothing of it. Accepted thinking nothing of it. It's been almost 15 years since I'd seen her last. She messaged me instantly about our pact. I felt like it was just a way to start conversation, but to a degree, she's serious. She tells me I always was the one that got away. She wants to finish what we started that night. She thinks before I get married, I should live out that fantasy one time. Oh, man. She posts pictures of herself, and of course, she looks great. I'm happy in my life and my relationship, but there's still immense attraction to her and the feeling I used to have. I eventually blocked her, but she creeps into my mind way too often. Your comments last week about sometimes missing things you don't actually miss hit home. I still fantasize about a woman who isn't my fiance, and I'm scared of what I'd do if the situation actually presented itself. Okay, not unlike, you know, look, there's a lot of guys this happens to. Makes a lot of sense. But you said something here that is the goal. So keep repeating to yourself this. I'm now in my mid-30s, engaged, have kids, and I'm happy. I actually love my life and being with my family. 90% of these emails are from people that are miserable, man. You're telling us you're happy. And I shouldn't say 90% are miserable. Maybe 90% of the ones that I don't read 90% is miserable emails, but a lot of people are bummed out. You are happy. And yet, by even thinking this way, it's almost like, do you want to fuck it up? I don't think you do. Okay. Now you keep thinking about somebody else. I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's your grandparents, the way they look at each other after 50 years. And, you know, that scene from Catch Me If You Can, where DiCaprio's at that nurse's house. It's Amy Ryan, right? Plays that character. She's awesome. I hope I got it right. And Martin Sheen is there with his wife and they're dancing, drying dishes. You don't think that guy's thinking about some girl from his 20s every now and then? Like, give me a fucking break, right? Like, at some point, he's thinking about that. So whenever we keep saying, like, this, the one that got away, it's a cool phrase. We all understand it. It's been repeated for decades, but there's not another part that means the one that got away and that you always have to get back. Like, the one that got away, all right. You're around long enough, there are going to be people that you date that you still think of from time to time. And it doesn't mean that you're like a bad person. It doesn't, it's not a unique thing. It's pretty normal. Like, to completely shut off all memories or all feelings or just those moments. And it doesn't even have to be in a relationship where all of a sudden you're like, oh man, I'm like at peace now because I thought about something. Or, oh, oh, wow, that girl, man. Yeah, I was really attracted to her. Wow, that was great. Okay, now here comes my kid running in with a snotty nose, and I can't wait to play catch with him outside. So, I mean, the fact that she's apparently the pattern only interested in you while you're with somebody, and now she knows you're engaged and you have kids, and she's kind of a shitty person, that she wants to mess with that. But here's where it comes into, like, you have to, I don't understand you blocking her. So if you blocked her, that must have freaked her out a little bit. But according to this, my guess would be you blocking her probably revved it up even more for her. So don't feel bad. Don't feel guilty because you have thoughts or you think of this one. I think a lot of people have that stuff. I think almost everybody does. And you can have that pop in your head from time to time and still be incredibly happy with your family and all that kind of stuff. If you were miserable with your current situation, then I'd say, all right, well, now we're worried. But the part that I think leads to all the trouble for guys and girls is when you let yourself kind of, like, you know, you start like texting with somebody they're not supposed to text with. And then it's like, oh, hey, you should meet up. And then you're like, okay. And then you keep putting yourself in vulnerable positions to not only feel this stuff again, but here she is basically saying like, hey, do you want to live out your fantasy from 15 years ago? I'm down. You can't ever talk to her. You can't. You can't talk to her, because if you're thinking about it as like, oh man, that would be awesome, you can't like give yourself an invitation to trouble. And that's what you would be doing by continuing to correspond with her, which apparently you haven't. So I think you've done the right thing here. I don't really think there's a ton of advice to give you. I think you've kind of nailed it. But the next time she reaches out to you is like, hey, let's meet up. You know, if you start having that dialogue, or if you meet up, like, you know what you're going to jeopardize. And in the middle of this, it sounds like you're pretty happy. So why would you want to jeopardize any of that stuff?
Yeah. You ought not do shit you're ashamed of. Seems like he's got it.
Yeah. I mean, look, some guys will, you know, the whole like act like you would if no one's watching. Be like, eh, that's not always like that's not always true, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice, but you know, it's not really true. In this case, this isn't a difficult solution. So, you know, Kyle, you probably got a couple lasses.
Oh, I mean,
you think about from time to time.
Yeah, sure. 27.
There's something weird about it too. Like when you hear from the one that got away and then they chime in, it's like, hey, you look and you're like, ah, oh, no way.
Exactly. That's why it's like
it's happened to me.
You keep moving the goalposts and it's like, all right, we're talking. And then it's like, oh, we're going to be in the same place at the same time. And then who knows what? So yeah, it's good to just, I think it might be weird that he blocked, but I mean, he has got the right idea.
Yeah. Cause I wonder what her response to being blocked was, but I know that there was something that happened to me. I don't know if I want to share the timeline, but it was something that I couldn't figure out for a couple of years. I was like, what? And then it came full circle and I was like, oh, like I was right. I was like, this person wasn't into me. I was like, what? I was like, why did you read that any differently than what you knew deep down it was? But it just got messed up. You couldn't get the answer. You kind of knew the answer. And then you ended up getting the answer you always believed in that you always kind of wanted. And yeah, probably pumped my ego up for a couple of days where I was like, yep, all right, cool. And then it was temporary. It didn't even mean anything. It was like a fleeting moment where I was like, oh yeah, all right. I am the man. Awesome. That's not really what I mean, but that's a good note to leave on. That's a good note. We got the Actors Studio this Friday. He's not the most famous guy, but he is very successful. And I want to talk about a guy who's kind of like at that B level of actors. So we're doing some different fun stuff. So, all right, that's what we're doing Friday. We'll talk to you then. Please, please subscribe, rate, and review Ryan Russillo Podcast, Ringer Network on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.